And welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special. And I want to bring on my co-host and producer, Miss Blue. She's got a very interesting author she wants to tell you about.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Lunch Special Show. Our guest today is author Eric Peterson, who grew up in Los Gatos, just south of here, and graduated from Stanford University with a BA in Communications. Eric Peterson recently published his book, Life as a Sandwich, published by Huckleberry House. It's a sharp-witted and darkly funny novel, which looks at one man's quest for identity. The book features a colorful cast of characters who threaten to turn the protagonist's attempt at long-awaited respect and success into a staggering personal defeat. Eric Peterson joins us here in the studio with his lovely wife and his youngest daughter, who attends Stanford. And you're all here because your oldest daughter just graduated. Katie graduated here from Stanford University yesterday. So we welcome you, Eric Peterson, to KZSU and family to the KZSU Lunch Special Show. And congratulations.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be here.
And I loved your book. Again, the book is called Life as a Sandwich. It is published by Huckleberry House, I'm sorry. And I fell in love with the book. I read it around 4 or 5 times. I received it around 4 or 5 months ago. And actually, I've read it a lot more than 4 or 5 times. And please tell us, why the title Life as a Sandwich?
Hey, Life as a Sandwich refers to the sandwich generation. The sandwich generation is defined as all the baby boomers who are squeezed between raising children and caring for elderly parents. So it's a situation a lot of us can relate to, because a lot of us are visiting parents in rest homes while we're leaving important business meetings to pick up kids from daycare. It just adds to a crazy life, and I thought it was a great jumping off point for a novel.
Okay, and if I may say, the book is a lot more. I thought it was almost life between a vice grip. It was very creative. You pulled out stories which echo, where we are, Silicon Valley. But anyways, I thought it was hilarious. I think I think it's the most fun book, which is about Silicon Valley. Anyways, I'm sounding like one of your characters.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I'm sounding like him.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I'm so sorry. Anyways, okay. What made you want to tell this story?
You know, a couple things. I've always wanted to write a book. I graduated from Stanford in 1979 with a journalism degree, always intending to go write a novel. And probably the first week out of school, I tried to start that novel, and I realized I had absolutely no content to work with. I hadn't had the life experiences. So I really went down the traditional business route and got married in the process, had 2 daughters, and at the age of 45 realized, wow, I have a lot of content now to work with. So it seemed like a great time to pick up that novel and just run with it.
And you wrote the book as a novel, but how much of it parallels your own life?
You know, a lot of it, when it started, I had spent a lot of time working at high-tech startups or starting my own companies. So I knew what it was like to take time away from the family, and particularly time away from very young, growing children, and the guilt of putting them into daycare and being the last parent to pick them up at the end of the day. So when I started the book, I really wanted to express the voice of a father explaining to his daughters why he was somewhat absent from their lives for, you know, real key growing up years. So really the book began as the voice of a father in a letter to his daughters to say, you know, I was trying to make a better life for our family, but in the process, it took a lot of my time and a lot of crazy things happened. It, as you know from reading the book, in a startup company, things don't necessarily always go well. And when things really start to unravel, it just takes that much more time away from the kids, but also puts a tremendous amount of pressure on the family.
And I'm just going to ask, what do you think your main character, Wallace Noe is ultimately looking for?
You know, at the graduation yesterday, I was listening to the U.S. Ambassador, or U.N. Ambassador, Susan Rice, and she was introduced to the crowd as being fearless. And I thought, you know, that's an interesting way to look at a person, because Wallace really is full of fears. He's a main character with flaws, and he has the expressed fear of failure, the fear of appearing incompetent. The fear of being publicly humiliated and embarrassed.
Which he is, by the way.
Horribly.
Quite a bit in the book. That was what hooked me to this book, is because this the protagonist just suffered so much, and the backstory is so fun. I really encourage people to read it, but I'm so...
Yeah. Well, and what Wallace really wants to do is he wants to make his mark on the world, and he realizes that his career is really in a doldrums. He's a consultant. He's traveling. He's stuck up in the backbiting of the consultants, who are all very smart people, but everybody wants to be right. So he decides it's time to go out and make his mark on the world. And he says, the way I'm going to do it is by launching a startup company. I'm going to get filthy rich. And at the beginning of the novel, Wallace really measures his success in terms of wealth. You know, how much wealth can I create? How much money can I make? Because that's his scorecard as the book begins.
And if I may say, how did you pull in parts of Silicon Valley into this book? Because you do mention quite a few locations which are pertinent to the Valley here.
Yeah, if you know the Valley, you know in this book that it's taking place right here. I grew up in Los Gatos, which is just down the road from Stanford, and watched in the 80s and the 90s how the world just went absolutely insane. The state of California really had its second gold rush in the 90s with that high-tech bubble. Everybody with a napkin and a pen was a business person. You couldn't pick up the press, the general press, the business press, without reading about these startup entrepreneurs that were, you know, creating billion-dollar companies in a matter of years, if not months. So it's a crazy world to begin with, but I really wanted to have a book that captured that crazy business world and the way people get caught up in the moment of, you know, the whose business is bigger than whose business, and how's this all going to work.
And some of the characters as we asked, did you know some people like that, like the mother-in-law and some of the CTO of the company? And I guess, okay, we're getting murky.
You know, one thing I do a lot, I speak to a lot of book clubs, and one of the first questions that's always asked is, are you Wallace? Is your wife Hannah? Are your children the kids described in the book? And I have to say, this book took me 6 years to write, which I think if you do the math, a 300-page book, that's probably about a paragraph a week. It's horrible. But no,
I think it's worth it, though, because some of the characters are so spot on.
Well, thank you. I take that as a great compliment. In the course of building a novel, though, one of the pitfalls in writing a novel is that you tend to write about real people, and real people, quite honestly, aren't that interesting. So you have to embellish characters. You have to make the good guys really good and the bad guys really bad. I tend to like to put a lot of flaws in my characters. And one of the fun things about going to book clubs is you hear a lot of the people say, you know, I read this whole book and I hate everybody in the book. And to me, that's a great compliment. But to some people, that's a reason to throw the book in the fire.
I thought it was hilarious. And, okay. And, do you think every man alive today is looking for that?
You know, I do think that every Stanford graduate, I would hope, wants to make a mark on the world. You know, we're only here for a brief period of time, and the question is, how are you going to make that mark, and are you going to take chances? And I think these are really interesting questions and things that are worthy of exploring in a novel. You know, that's a great format for exploring that kind of question.
I think they're around the last, 20 pages or 10 pages. I mean, I thought it was a cliffhanger. You don't know where it's going to go. And when you get to the end, I mean, I felt a thousand, I mean, people talked about the characters that they didn't like. I felt a thousand times better when I reached the end.
Yeah, you know, one of the similarities in being a novelist and being a business person is, by definition, you're an optimist. When you launch that startup company, you've got to believe that it's going to achieve great, great things. You don't quite know, you've got a business plan, but you don't quite know how you're going to get there. When you start a manuscript, You think you're writing the great American novel, but you truly don't know if you're going to have just an absolute mess by the time you finish it.
Again, we're talking with author Eric Peterson. He is the author of the novel Life as a Sandwich. Mr. Peterson graduated from Stanford. His daughters, one just graduated. Her name is Katie. Congratulations, Katie, for graduating from Stanford University. And we're here in the studio with his lovely wife, Teresa, and Caroline, and we're going to listen to some musical selections which they chose especially for the lunch special. And again, the book is called Life as a Sandwich. It is available from Huckleberry House Press. And Mr. Peterson, Eric Peterson, thank you so much for talking with us about the book. And now we'll let you we'll let Bird take over and spin some songs. We're back here at the lunch special, and we're here with author Eric Peterson. His latest book is called Life as a Sandwich. It is available from Huckleberry House. And we have Mr. Eric Peterson right in the studio along with his family. Eric, please tell us about the song and why you chose to play it on the show.
Well, you asked us to bring 6 to 8 cuts of music. Caroline, who was that? Caroline, my daughter, who just finished her freshman year here at Stanford.
Dad, that was Sugar Ray.
Sugar Ray.
Yeah.
And we think, I believe that song came out, was that about the 90s?
I remember listening to that song was about 5 or 6 years old.
While I was driving you around to soccer games.
That's right.
I thought it's a great sunny record. It reminds me of a very sunny time in my life. To me, it's a great California song. And Life as a Sandwich really is a California novel. It really has three overarching themes in it. And one of the things I wanted to deal with is the state of California and the transition that it's undergoing. It's known as a very sunny state, kind of like that song. San Diego in particular is known for its, you know, beautiful, majestic beaches, white sand beaches and palm trees and blue waters. But California is also a state in transition right now. You know, it's a minority-majority population. By the year 2020, I think the Hispanics are going to be a majority in the state. There are a lot of issues with respect to borders and culture and politics and language. There are a lot of people that have been cut out of, you know, the American dream, or that are really struggling to make it in California. So I wanted to touch on, you know, a beautiful setting like California, but also show the underbelly of this beautiful state, which is there are a lot of minorities struggling to make it the same way that that people in business are struggling to make it. And to me, that was just a great theme.
And even the VC capital of where we are now, yeah, locally, that was a fascinating backstory to bring into your novel.
Yeah. Wallace, early on, runs into trouble with his startup company. It becomes its own sandwich because they get squeezed for cash while they're trying to successfully, you know, walk their clients through the development of a software product. And so they're in their own sandwich. They turn to the venture capital industry for help. That really becomes their lifeline. So as they're running very low on cash, they have no choice but to deal with these venture capitalists. And if you've been around Palo Alto or Silicon Valley, you know that these guys are great, great characters for a novel. They have they've been known to have humongous egos. And so for a character that's, you know, interesting in a novel, we have a venture capitalist here that I really, really had fun with in writing that character.
Did you come across a VC like that?
I've come across several like that. The dirty little, well, it's not a dirty secret. The secret is my father actually launched one of the first venture firms on the West Coast back in 1962. And I grew up around a lot of these guys. He actually was a lecturer at the Stanford Business School. The course he lectured in was New Enterprise Management. So he was the students in his class would write business plans as their quarterly project. So I grew up around the dinner table hearing business plans talked about and reading business plans. What I noticed, though, is that that old guard of venture capitalists, the guys that were, you know, back in the 60s that were truly pioneering a new business, are great gentlemen. And everyone to this day is a great gentleman. I thought it was very interesting to see the second generation of venture capitalists, and it's a whole different ballgame. And that was the generation I wanted to portray in Life as a Sandwich.
And talk about this cover, by the way, which you chose for the book. How did you choose that?
We worked with a cover artist, and of course, I envisioned a kind of a Carl Hiassen type cover, you know, a sandwich on a white jacket. And she said, "No, that's too obvious. You can't do a sandwich. You've got to do something different." The theme of the book really is this guy. It's a train wreck about to happen, and it, as the reader, you see this train wreck coming, and you never quite know when it's going to hit this guy. He also has a passion for model railroading, which is kind of an oddball little hobby, but it's his way of escaping life and dealing with all the things that are going wrong. There's a line in the book where a minister who shares the same hobby with him tries to explain their passion for the hobby by saying it gives us a world that we can manage, where we can control what happens. Well, poor Wallace can't even control his electric train set because the train goes off the track all the time and crashes, and it becomes what should be a great comfort in his life becomes an absolute source of frustration.
And if I may ask, how do you think this area has changed? Like Los Gatos, do you go back once in a while?
We do, with two daughters at school up here. We'd love to get up here as often as we can. The traffic's gotten a little bit worse than what I remember, but we love this area, love coming up here. Yeah.
And did you want to set this book by any chance in Silicon Valley, in Los Gatos, or you just chose definitely San Diego? Just for the scope of your story.
You know, I chose San Diego because it was a setting that I was ultimately familiar with, and I don't know. I like the idea of San Diego being a little bit removed from Silicon Valley. Wallace, in talking to his father tries to get him to come back up to Northern California, saying people in Northern California are more serious. It's a better place to launch a startup company. And having launched some businesses in San Diego, I know there is always a source of conflict with, say, the venture capital community in Palo Alto as to, you know, where is the best place to locate a company, because there are resources, there's talent, and there can be a price to pay for launching a company that's outside of the Bay Area.
And if I may ask, what, like 6 years ago, you just decided, I'm going to go on and I'm going to write this novel, and did you have like a structure? How did it, what was the process that it took to get this?
I really started with three themes, as I mentioned, California being one theme. The second theme that I really wanted to explore was the business world. I wanted to give an accurate representation of the business world.
Because
in my mind, yeah.
You've been on both sides of that coin, and I think you're a good representative to...
Well, in my mind, there haven't been a lot of accurate portrayals of business. In the media, businessmen tend to be the villains, period. If you go to a movie and there's a businessman in the first act, you know that he's going to end up being the murderer by the third act. So I wanted to show really what it's like in the business world, and you know that there are people that are really trying to do the right thing and working hard. The third theme in the novel that I wanted to explore was really the beleaguered baby boomer as a character. And in my lifetime, the middle class white male has really been marginalized by the media to a great extent. They're represented in the media by, say, the Drew Carey Show or Everybody Loves Raymond. It's always the buffoon who his kids run circles around him. He's easily manipulated by his wife. And in literary fiction, you really don't see the point of view of the middle-class white male expressed often. So I really wanted to tackle that as a theme as well, which actually leads into, I think, our next song.
Okay, and again, we're here with author Eric Peterson. He's with his family. He is the author of the recently published book, novel, Life as a Sandwich, which is available from Huckleberry House. It's a hilarious book. I would recommend it to anybody. And so, Mr. Peterson, Eric Peterson, go ahead and introduce the next song for our listening audience.
Let me double check what it is. Oh, this is a song. I happen to listen to country music as I'm writing. And one of the things I wanted to pick up was the multicultural aspect of the state of California. So I thought Brad Paisley's American Saturday Night would be an absolute perfect fit for the way California is becoming a great multicultural state.
Yeah, she's going around the world tonight, but she ain't leaving here. She's just gonna meet her boyfriend down at the street fair. And it's a French kiss, Italian ice, Spanish moss in the moonlight. Just another American Saturday night. There's a big toga party tonight down Delta Chi. They got Canadian bacon on their pizza pie. They got a cooler full of cold Coronas and Amstel Light. It's like we're all living in a big old cup. Just fire up the blender, mix it all up. It's a French kiss, Italian.
side. Live from New York, it's a French kiss. Italian eyes, Spanish moss in the moonlight. Just another American. Just another American. It's just another American Saturday
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and everybody give Blue a round of applause. She's the associate producer of this show, and every once in a while, she'll take the time, find the author, bring him in, and I say, hey, Blue, you do it. Come on, you interview him. You read the book. Back here now with Eric Peterson, and I think it appropriate at this point, Eric, to introduce your whole family.
Yeah, I have...
Hang on. I got to push the right button. Okay, here we go. Eric Peterson back with us now. And Eric, why don't you go ahead and introduce, because they're here in the studio with us.
Yeah,
and
we've all been up for my oldest daughter Katie's graduation, which was yesterday.
Here at Stanford. You must be proud of that.
Absolutely proud. English major and a Stanford Dolly in her sophomore year.
And explain what that is for folks who don't know.
Dollies, they're five girls who dance with the band. You can't call them cheerleaders or you get in big, big trouble. But the Dollies dance with the band, and it's a very competitive thing to get. And they typically do it in their sophomore year. It's a crazy year because everywhere the band goes, the girls go. And so they're dancing in street parades. They're dancing at football games. They're dancing at basketball games. We even though we live in San Diego, we got season tickets the year that Katie was a Dolly, and that was the year that we went to the Coliseum and beat USC in football. So it's been a phenomenal run for especially for those Dollies, and they're a terrific bunch of girls.
So everywhere the band goes, anywhere the band plays at a sporting event, the Dollies are there.
There's a row of five girls in front, and they dance to every song.
Now, do they wear Stanford uniforms, or is it like the band where they show up and everybody's dressed differently?
Now, Dollies do have uniforms.
Do they?
Yeah, and I've learned Teresa. My wife Teresa is here. Teresa, you'll have to tell me though. What are the colors? I think there's three different.
Well, there's a white with the red trim. There's a red with the white trim, and then there's a crimson, and they
and a lot of rhinestones
and a lot of bedazzling.
And that was what, 2 years ago she did that?
Well, her sophomore year. But then when they graduate, the dollies in that class jump back up on stage in their old Dolly costumes. So we got to see Katie dance one last time as a Dolly
yesterday at graduation with the band.
Yep,
in 95 degree weather.
Yeah, that must have been fun.
Yep. And then she had to run as fast as she could and put on her black cap and gown and go to Memorial Church and get her diploma in English literature.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, your other daughters come with you today. Caroline.
Yep. Caroline's with us. Caroline just finished her freshman year.
Here at Stanford.
That's right.
So you're a Stanford student.
I am.
So you're going to be getting a radio show down here anytime soon?
I don't know. We'll see.
That's one way to corral the students in here, right? We can't drag them here, but we get their parents and get the parents to bring them down here.
Absolutely.
Then we can get you involved.
Yeah. Caroline, you should play the make your radio show playing all that music you made me listen to as I was driving you around to soccer games.
Oh, Dad.
a lot of NSYNC.
Caroline, what are you into, what are you studying here at Stanford?
I'm a little unsure of what I'm actually going to major in. I'm thinking something pre-business at this point, either economics or public policy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I just started out with some of the basic freshman requirements. It's been great.
How do you find the How do you find being here at Stanford?
I love it. It keeps me busy, but it's fabulous.
And how about you probably meet kids from all over the world, right?
Oh, yeah. We had several different countries represented even just in my freshman dorm. So it's very interesting.
Caroline is also on the equestrian team at Stanford, which is kind of interesting.
I didn't even know we had one.
We do. Yeah. We're nationally ranked. Got fourth in nationals this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Where do you all practice?
We have the Stanford Red Barn. It's out by the golf course off of campus drive.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. I hadn't even heard about that. There's so much going on here. You know, it takes a lot to keep up with most of it.
Yeah, that barn is an amazing facility, too. If you ever get out there, it's probably nicer than most universities.
Really?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Those horses live well.
Teresa, Eric, your wife is here, Teresa. And Teresa, why don't you introduce yourself? And how did you get mixed up with this crazy guy?
I don't know. Actually, it's a... sort of an interesting story. As he said, his dad was an investment or a
venture capitalist,
and he was actually, I was working for a real estate developer in San Diego County, and his dad's company was our financial partner. So I'd known his dad for 10 years before I met Eric.
Really?
Yeah, and all of a sudden he just showed up in my office one day. That was it.
You think they set you up?
I don't know.
He ain't talking.
Nope.
So, who picked the music today? Was it a group effort or
was I think it was just... a group effort. We solicited input and then we narrowed it down to what do we have about I think about 8 songs.
Now, do these songs all relate to the book?
They all relate to the book. The next song relates to the main character. I mentioned that he has a passion for the hobby of model railroading, but he also hides a bit from life by having an occasional cocktail. And there was a great song, I think again from the 90s, called Tub Thumping. Can we say it on the radio?
You can say that on the radio. All right. You just said it, so if we can't, it's too late. Is this the song?
This is it.
All right.
Truth is, I thought it mattered. I thought that music mattered. But does it bollocks? Not compared to how people matter.
We'll be singing when we're winning. We'll be singing. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down.
This in the night.
here with Eric Peterson and family. We got a real Stanford family situation going on here. We just discovered we're looking at three generations here. Well, not in the room with us, but Eric, why don't you talk about this? And apparently, did your father-in-law go to Stanford too? Teresa, did your father go to Stanford?
No, Teresa's father-in-law went to Stanford. My father.
Oh, Eric's okay, dad. Right. Yeah. So your dad went to Stanford, you went to Stanford, and your daughters are going to Stanford.
Well, and my grandfather went to Stanford.
And your mother?
I think my grandfather, I think, was in, at least he claimed that John Steinbeck was in his class.
What? Here at Stanford?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. This is getting deep now.
Yeah.
This is getting real deep.
So my father came here, I think, in the early 50s, mid-50s.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went into the Marine Corps, then came back and went through business school here and got his MBA.
Wow. So he came here first, then went to the Marines, and then went back?
Back to business school.
Wow.
And he absolutely loved this university. He was a trustee here in the, I want to say in the 80s and 90s, Teresa?
That's right.
Anyway, was a passionate football fan and supporter of the athletics department. And I know he spent a lot of time here at the university as a trustee working on everything from, I think he helped negotiate Bill Walsh's football contract to, compensation packages for university presidents and really interesting stuff.
Before Eddie DiBartolo stole him back to the 49ers, right? That happened right when I got here. I remember that.
Squirrely
No. What it was then John Arriaga stole him back.
I think so, yeah.
Away from the 49ers to back here at Stanford. Anyway, Eric, your book, Life as a Sandwich, Blue, our producer, interviewed you about that. It's from Huckleberry House, and I bet your family's real proud of you about that. Did you ever think you'd be having a dad or a husband that's an author?
Well, he's been writing ever since I've known him, so I had no doubt that it was going to happen sooner
day.
Or later. Yes.
There you go.
He's been writing for as long as I've known him. So
now, and Caroline's been a big help. We started out obviously with a website called lifeasasandwich.com where you can order the book on Amazon or get it at Barnes & Noble or Borders.
Well, did Caroline set up your website?
Well, more importantly, we had Caroline work on the social media marketing side of it. So there is an Eric Peterson Facebook page.
Okay.
That I would still be working on were it not for Caroline. We have a Twitter account. We're on YouTube. We have a book trailer on YouTube.
You tweet?
I've attempted. I don't quite get it. I think I'm a little too old for that.
It's 140 characters, man. What's not to get? Caroline, you tweet, right?
I don't. I'm just on Facebook.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a young person that doesn't tweet. That's surprising me. I guess it's not for everybody.
No, I don't know. I've just never really looked into it.
So. But as a I look at publishing or marketing a book as running a small business, and the small business owners are really dependent on Caroline's generation to get them wired up for the social media marketing stuff. So Caroline's been a huge help on that end of the book business for us.
How do you like that, Caroline, working with your dad on that?
You know, it's been really fun. It's been really interesting. And it's also, come into play in my Stanford career here. I took an introductory seminar here in spring quarter, and we talked a lot about business on the internet and how it's evolving and how it's changing and the advantages and possible disadvantages of that and how to really take advantage of the opportunities on the internet.
So that helped you out with it?
Yeah. No, it's been interesting. Yeah.
Very cool.
A pretty good segue here to one of the conflicts for Wallace, our main character in the story, is how does he deal with the challenges of technology? We really established the book. He faces conflict in three different fears. There's his family conflict, which is his wife is nervous about the cash, and she sees the savings dwindling at an alarming rate. So it drives her to want to work harder in her own career and bring more wealth into the family. The second sphere of conflict is with the work situation. Wallace runs out of money in his own startup, so he has to hook up with another more mature company, but the boss turns out to be just that absolute jerk that we've all been subjected to in the workplace. This guy is your worst nightmare, and suddenly Wallace is his subordinate and the minority shareholder and really feels the brunt of that. And then on the third sphere of conflict, Wallace has we were talking to Blue a little earlier, Wallace has a little community conflict, we'll call it, where he finds himself on the wrong side of a legal system that really consumes its victims and without a lot of regard for the situation. So with these daunting conflicts, I thought to go to our fourth song would be absolutely fitting.
Let's play.
And Caroline picked this one.
What is it?
I don't know. What is Death?
Queen, Under Pressure.
Oh, okay.
Chipping around, keep my brains on the floor. These are the days, it never rains but it pours. Eat on up, eat up, eat on up, eat up, eat on up, eat up. People on streets, eat on, eat on. People on streets, eat on, eat on, eat on, eat on. It's the terror of knowing this world. Away from it all like a blind man sat on a fence, but it don't work. Keep coming up in love, but it's a slash to talk.
Right here on KZSU Stanford, in the middle of a Stanford family interview. Almost three generations here with us, two generations of Stanford folks. And your other daughter, who couldn't make it today, she's working here on campus, right?
She is the kitchen manager at Theta Sorority House.
Do you got the radio on? You want to throw her a shout out?
Katie. You better be listening.
That's right.
She has one more hour, an hour and 10 minutes to clean that kitchen and close that door and lock it.
So it's not all like fun and games. And, you know, they talk about Stanford students like they're all spoiled kids. And some have to work, don't they?
We work hard.
I don't know. You know, if you go over to the Theta House, and see their personal chef, it's hard to gin up too much sympathy for them.
Is it really?
Yeah. Personal chef for a sorority house.
Right. But a lot of students do work on campus, don't they?
Yeah. I'd say a good majority of my friends had jobs on campus.
So you gotta kind of supplement and get something going on when you get here, huh?
If you're not working, you're doing sports or just studying hard. There's always something to do.
Yeah, in this show that I've interviewed about 200 different folks from around Stanford, professors, the president, I get the real feeling too that it's high expectations, but it's done with in a kind of a way where everybody, the whole level of academia here is really high. Like, people are into all kinds of different things. We had on the director of the Stanford Woodwind Ensemble last week, an Italian professor, Giancarlo Acquilante, and he talked about all his students in the ensemble were all from the engineering school.
Oh, wow.
That wasn't their major. They weren't full-time musicians, you know? This was a sideline for them, but they go tour and stuff. So just as a part-time thing, they're in something that somebody would make a whole life out of, and they're engineering students on top of it, you know?
Well, it was, as a writer, it was frightening to sit in Memorial Church yesterday and see all these kids graduating with creative writing degrees, because that's a lot of competition. I gotta get out of this business.
Well, there's a lot of stories to tell, so. Now, we have some more music queued up, and what are we going to listen to next?
Hey, we were talking about the main character in this story, and he's a hero, but with flaws, and so I thought this was an appropriate song.
This is the last worthless evening. inside their houses with the shades pulled down. God knows we could use some romance in this sleepy bedroom town. I know you're still afraid to rush into anything. There's just so many summers, babe, just so many springs, hey. And this is the
back now, winding it up with the, well, this has just been a lot of fun. The Peterson, the whole Peterson family, almost the whole Peterson family. And there's two daughters. That's it. Any brothers?
No brothers.
Two daughters. How do you get along with your sister? You better get along real good. You guys go to college together.
Yeah, we get along real well.
That's great.
Yeah.
And Eric, you must be proud of your kids.
Absolutely proud of them. They work hard. I'll tell you, these kids have worked hard since I stopped helping them with math in about fifth grade.
Cool.
They work hard.
To get into Stanford, it's no easy task, so you got to work hard.
It's amazing.
Once again, the name of the book, Life as a Sandwich, published by Huckleberry House. Eric Peterson is the author. I want to thank Teresa and Caroline for coming in and
supporting
your husband and dad. And Eric, any last, if the folks want to get a hold of you about your book, your work, your musical picks, anything, can they do that?
Lifeasasandwich.com is the website. You can do anything from email me. You can order a copy of the book from Amazon or from Barnes & Noble or from Borders. And you can even schedule a meetup with your book club. And we can Skype you, we can call in. But this is the kind of story that really... It has a lot of characters. People have a lot of fun with it. And mm-hmm. I love to call in and talk to book clubs.
Very cool.
Yeah. Okay. Lifeasasandwich.com. Look us up.
Thank you very much for coming and spending time with us. And come back soon.
We would love it. Pleasure being here.
We're going to get the other daughter on here soon, too.
Absolutely. We'll get her in here.
And Caroline, come down and get a show at the start of the fall quarter, okay?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. What are we going out with?
This is one of the latest Eagles story or Eagles songs, and it has to do with being guilty of the crime.
Ooh.
Which fits into the book.